Hello and welcome to the England Athletics podcast. This is our look ahead to the 2024 outdoor season. We'll discuss changes to the way competitions are run, some new events on the calendar this year, and generally the vision for the sport. CEO Chris Jones is with me. Chris, we've had a great start to the year, so I suppose let's just begin by looking back on what we've seen.
We have indeed. Where to start, Alex? Firstly, hello. Nice to see you again and to speak with you. We just started before we went on air, reminiscing on the World Indoors in Glasgow, and there were some fantastic performances. I was particularly delighted by Molly Caldrey's World Indoor Gold in the pole vault. Fantastic to see someone achieve such heights in the field events and to have, you know, watched her progress over the last few years. Obviously did well in Birmingham and has come through the athlete pathway in England. And I think some of the emotion, the outpouring of emotion after her success from family and from others who have followed her progress was fantastic. And we look forward to seeing how she's going to go in Paris, the Olympic Games, which of course is exciting all of us. It's not too far away from these shores, and the Olympic and Paralympic Games, 100 years on from the Chariots of Fire Games of 1924, promises to be quite a mouth-watering spectacle for everyone following the sport of athletics and, of course, other sports as well, knowing that many of our track and field stars would have enjoyed other sports growing up in their teenage years and would have excelled at some of those sports before deciding that athletics was for them. And I'm sure all followers of Team GB will be watching with bated breath to see how the British athletes fare in Paris.
Yeah, and mentioning Molly Caldrey there, there's many reasons, obviously, for her winning gold on the day, but it is a vote of confidence for the way things work to see a young athlete who many at England Athletics and who've been following the sport for years have seen come through those junior levels.
It's never a linear path, is it? There are a number of reasons why athletes will progress or not, as the case may be. Foundations are important. Having support from parents and carers and siblings who are prepared to give up their weekends from time to time to, you know, get in the car, get on the train, or whatever mode of transport is used to travel to competitions to support brothers or sisters. Strong, supportive, welcoming environment in the club, that, or clubs in some cases where some athletes are first and second claim, is vitally important. And having supportive volunteers, coaches. It's a late development sport as well, so athletes will encounter some challenges along the way. You know, this is a journey, instant success at age group level. You know, let's not be too overwhelmed by that. Let's recognize this is a journey with some athletes not realizing their best until their mid, late 20s, into their 30s sometimes. And, you know, we need to do more as a sport to support athletes through those challenging periods, particularly around GCSE, A-level education, and recognizing there's a lot going on in a young athlete's life or lives around those times. And we need to make sure that we're supportive as a sport, removing unnecessary barriers and bureaucracy where that exists, and providing a great experience, because transitioning young athletes to senior levels of participation and competition is vitally important. Pleasingly, if you look across the sport, lots of competition providers and generally providers of our sport are embracing change, are being prepared to adapt. So I think there are a number of factors why athletes progress or don't progress at the rate that we would want from time to time. It's never quite that straightforward, shall we say.
Just tell me a little bit about the coming year. Obviously, we mentioned the Olympic Games, but what's happening within England Athletics, I suppose, planning ahead for this year and what the priorities are?
Well, just drawing breath on what's been an action-packed period, of course, on the roads, multi-terrain-wise as well. You know, a lot of ultra-distance competitions and a lot more people taking a lot more interest, I think, in those kind of challenges, if I could use that word. I mean, in fact, we're a few weeks on from, I think, Scottish athlete Jasmine Paris achieving what she did in the Barclay Endurance Challenge. I mean, phenomenal achievement. But if you look closer to home, the number of athletes that are performing really well domestically and further afield in endurance challenges and races is astounding, really. A lot of English athletes involved in those efforts. The national road relays in Sutton Park, county championships coming up in early May. We've obviously got English Schools Track and Field Cup, and we'll have the English Schools Track and Field Championships at the start of July in Birmingham, which England Athletics is supporting again financially. I think it's over 10 years now we've worked with the English Schools. England Athletics will be running its two championship weekends during the middle of the summer period. We're moving to a kind of Friday to Sunday format now to free up more space in the calendar for other events and to try and test new approaches and to make sure that we can use that Friday evening to create some sort of spectacle and experience for athletes and supporters alike. We're bringing back the Manchester International in August, introducing the inaugural England Athletics National Club Relays Championship the next day after the Manchester International in Birmingham. And we're going to host an under-20s international fixture, I believe, somewhere down south, could be Windsor. And the UK School Games national event takes place at the back end of August, of course, butting up against the YDL national finals as well. So lots of activity to look forward to. And I must say that, you know, all of that is fundamentally reliant on a hardworking volunteer base.
Yeah, you mentioned the Barclay Marathons and also some other events doing something differently, because we've talked in previous podcasts about how we can innovate. And it seems that within England Athletics and outside, we're seeing maybe the fruits of that thought on how we can innovate and change things. Also including the England 5K Championships, which was held as part of one big podium 5K festival in Leicester, I believe. That included singular time trials.
Yeah, correct.
But yeah, there seems to be a real rise in innovation.
I think so. And athletes and runners will vote with their feet ultimately as well. They'll go to the provision that is most accommodating, provides the greatest experience for them. And of course, will, I guess, more often than not, be financially more efficient for them as well, you know, in terms of travel distance and time spent at the competition itself, making sure that, you know, you're not spending a lot of time, dare I say, waiting around for your event to take place. You know, the commentary is fantastic, musical atmosphere there, catering is top notch, warm, welcoming environment, if you like, where you can compete against athletes of a similar standard, similar ambition, and that spurs you on to develop as an individual. And we're seeing lots of that across the sport. We're working to try and evolve our offer as an organization. Of course, we only control a small proportion of what happens within the sport. Of course, we license a number of the events on and off the track. So through licensing standards and conditions, you know, you can encourage change, accepting that we are here to support those volunteers that give their time, maybe as technical officials, team managers, etc. But of course, the athletes themselves, because we're operating in an environment where there is lots of choice and the world is quite different, isn't it, post-pandemic than it was, you know, 5 years ago, but then 10, 15, 20 years ago. There are lots of sporting offers, leisure pursuits that are available for people to enjoy. And outside of sport, it is a busy life, isn't it, to try and fit everything in. We're talking about laying the foundations for those that are coming through now in their early teenage years into their early 20s, mid-20s, etc., so that they can pick up the gauntlet, if you like, and run with it in the future. That would be some legacy to leave for all of us, wouldn't it?
And then looking at the kind of ultra-running, longer-distance side, it's interesting because there has seemingly been a rise in popularity in that. But it might be something that's outside some clubs' expertise. And it's interesting to think where the expertise and who's responsible for the provision actually within the sport.
Yeah, and I think England Athletics and other bodies can play a role there in terms of upskilling, educating, if you like, to take people through that journey. Obviously, a number of larger commercial organisations are involved in staging, dare I say, some of the longer distance, more risk-laden events, I would say, you know, where there's a big need to focus on health and safety, risk assessment, making sure that participant safety is at the heart of that effort. So I think as governing bodies got responsibility to try and share and connect providers together And, you know, you mentioned the Podium 5K Festival hosted by our sponsors, Sports Shoes. You know, those kind of organisations, Great Run Company, London Marathon, some of the bigger commercial organisations that are event specialists, I think, you know, could come together and work with England Athletics and other providers to kind of take some of the other volunteer-led organisations through that journey, if you like. So that's something that we'll be looking at. You know, but having that open mindset again and being prepared to collaborate, to listen, to learn, to share is fundamentally important in providing services for our athletes.
Yeah, no, I definitely think we'll see quite a few athletes just experimenting to see where their potential is in some of these newer events now that we've got also a World Athletics Road Running Championships, a European off-road running. I've seen people that have been maybe third in a steeplechase at under 20 level at England Championships thinking, well, I'll go at this.
They might not have found their right event yet, of course. And that's the great thing about the choice that's provided within our sport that, you know, with it being a late development sport, it gives the opportunity for athletes to try and test new approaches. I do think the other thing that athletes are looking more closely at now is obviously the sustainability ESG agenda, how events are provided, how resources, equipment, supplies are sourced, how far they have to travel, obviously with the environment being at the forefront of their interest there. The kind of ethical side of competition and event provision is becoming more important, I think, to more athletes. And I think we've got some fantastic ambassadors within the sport. Hannah Cockcroft, who's one of our ambassadors around sustainability ESG, Innes Fitzgerald, and others. Such passion should be applauded.
Sort of on that, there is a fairly new athlete panel as well, which England Athletics has launched. Just tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, really excited about that, Alex. Obviously, there's the UK Athletes Commission, which has a direct line into the UK Athletics Board, if you like. But that's very much focused on what I would say elite world-class performance athletics and the environment and the culture around how that operates. At a domestic level, England Athletics, I often describe as the kind of meringue, if you like, the bigger meringue, with UK being the cherry on the top of the meringue or cake, if you like. Obviously, we have a wider, deeper remit covering, you know, coach education, officials education, participation in the sport, talent development up to Commonwealth Games level. We are the membership body with a club organisation, and we license all the off-track and multi-terrain events as well. So getting the views of athletes and participants of all levels and all backgrounds is fundamentally important to shape policy, program, procedure, and how we deliver at England Athletics. So the athlete panel has met on a couple of occasions now. It's been headed up by Sarah Benson, our head of talent development, and also supported by Marilyn Okoru, who's a board director at England Athletics, obviously Olympian. But it's more than just about talent. It's about getting that wider perspective on the experience of the athletes in our sport.
You mentioned age groups. So one change for this year has been incorporating the under 20 and senior championships together with under 23. I think you touched on it there previously with the sort of Friday to Sunday change as well. So just explain a little bit about that, because again, I know in previous podcasts we've said that there is a desire to look at how the senior championships is run because entries were lower there than at other events.
Absolutely. It's about making a better experience, providing a better experience for athletes, spectators, technical officials, creating more of a real competitive feel and great environment, great commentary, music, refreshments. Obviously, we're looking at Birmingham as the two venues for our summer championships this year. There will be some nervousness, no doubt, some hesitation. Oh, Friday evening, we haven't tried that before. How's that going to work logistically? You know, with people trying to get to Birmingham mid, late afternoon to compete, et cetera, on a Friday. But you've got to try and test these things. You've got to listen to people and you've got to adapt. And people bemoan the fact that the calendar's congested. Well, if we're going to advocate change, and then we have to lead from the front in that regard. So that's behind some of the thinking in that sense.
Yes. So we've talked about competition. What about coaching and officiating? Yeah, in your recent blog, you said, we know that there's more to do in just refining how the qualifications work and how we kind of broaden the base of people involved.
Definitely. I mean, we took responsibility for coach and official licensing from UK as home countries in October the 1st last year, 2023. We've spent the first few months, if you like, as home countries, getting under the bonnet, looking at the qualification framework, the course content, making some small but important changes to start with, particularly at entry levels, trying to make access to our sport easy for people to get involved without compromising on risk and health and safety, recognizing that the needs at entry level are very different to the needs further up the pathway. There's been a bit of an upsurge in those registering for leader-led and coach qualifications. We have more work to do then in getting more officials through at entry level into level two and beyond. And I think mentoring is central to that as well. So we're on that journey now under the leadership of Chris Mallander, who's overseeing education leadership, if you like, for the home countries UK-wide, with the likes of Paul Mosley, who oversees content for education courses, and Mark Ritchie, the officials development manager in England, just making sure that we're providing the best experience we possibly can for volunteers and celebrating success, celebrating the achievements of volunteers. And I was delighted recently to be in the Midlands to commend the National England Athletics Volunteer Award winners of 2023. And listening to some of their stories and the motivations that encourage them to do what they do and continue to do what they do is an inspiration for other people. And of course, we'll be kicking off the nomination process very shortly for the 2024 England Athletics Volunteer Awards program across nine English regions, which will culminate this year, I believe, 2nd of November at the England Athletics Hall of Fame, which returns in Leicester. And we'll be recognising the achievements of those great individuals who tirelessly commit their services to our sport.
We've seen quite a number of athletes become coaches in recent years. It's been happening for time, of course, but I think there's increased organisation maybe of an athlete to coach specific pathway. Just to bring out some examples, Darren Campbell, who's involved in the relays at UKA, Robbie Grabarts, who's stepped in very well in the last few years, an Olympic medalist himself, John Lane and others.
Leon Baptiste, yeah. Laura Turner, Jenny Meadows, yeah. Yeah, Kelly Sutherton, you know, others. And there are more queuing up, if you like, to follow in their footsteps. And I think it's fundamentally important, particularly in track and field, the majority of our participants are in their teenage years and, you know, navigating through those challenging periods around the ages of 15, 16, 17, 18, being able to relate to what those young people are going through, I think is a positive with athletes who are recently retired to then put something back into the sport. I'm not saying for one minute that that doesn't mean other people can provide those support services. Of course they can, but I do think it's a help that we're getting more athletes who are looking to pay back into the sport and give back to what's been so good to them as well.
There are, of course, some proposals. Now, we mentioned them in the autumn. So what's the latest on those age group change proposals and just a little recap of the idea behind them?
Yeah, so the Board of UK Athletics have now approved that proposal, subject to further consultation on the implementation by 2026, so April 2026. So recently, the home countries involving, I'd say probably England and Wales, have taken the lead with that of stage three webinars. The first webinar was for parents and athletes and carers. The second for coaches, the third for technical officials and club volunteers. We had around 50-odd people attend each one of those webinars. We're now holding regional open forums across England to follow up on those conversations, to talk not just about the age group changes, but the wider challenge of retaining athletes in track and field athletics. The main driver really was that athletes have fed back to us that exam pressure around GCSE and A-level time was a factor in them dropping out of the sport and just being under undue stress, if you like. You know, we're listening to that feedback, if you like, through research. And as home countries have got behind that proposal, we consulted in the autumn, of course, made that proposal to the rules group. And then obviously the UK Athletics Board has made its decision, but delaying that to 2026 to allow more time for consultation around implementation. There will be a series of working groups that will be set up by the home countries, focused on aspects such as implement weight, size, height, but also then records in the sport and various other aspects. So, of course, volunteer providers of our sport will want assurance on, quite rightly. So we're committed to providing those answers. And Dean Hardman, who's former chair of the British Athletics League, who previously worked for England Athletics, had been brought in as a project facilitator, if you like, not just of the age group implementation consultation, but also of the wider track and field review that the home countries have committed themselves to, focusing on recognising that age groups is just one of a number of factors that will, we hope, retain more athletes in our sport through to senior levels of participation. We've touched on some of the other factors earlier in the podcast, such as competition format, delivery, making sure that the environment in clubs is warm and welcoming, making sure that coaching and coach development is in good shape and appropriate as athletes move through those challenging years. As I say, people will have different views. There will be staunch supporters of such change. There will be those that no doubt will be staunch opponents to such change. And there'll be people in the middle who aren't quite sure. So that's why aspects such as age groups and delaying through to 2026 to allow that time for further conversation, further consultation is fundamentally important.
Well, talk about 2026 brings me nicely onto the next Commonwealth Games. We were waiting to see what might happen, hoping for an update early this year. Not been an easy period for the Commonwealth Games Federation to kind of work this one out. But any thoughts on when we might hear something?
Mid-April is the latest date that we've been informed is a critical juncture. We wait for that decision with anticipation. Of course, it was coverage around Malaysia. Malaysia then have withdrawn from the process. We believe there are discussions going on with other nations. We'll see in due course. We all hope that 2026, even if the program, the competition is put back deeper into 2026 rather than in the earlier part of the year, we all hope that takes place. And we believe that, you know, Commonwealth Youth Games, the bidding process for that will start sometime this year as well. So fundamentally important elite stepping stone competition, I would say, for athletes moving through that pathway. We've seen some of the greatest British, Northern Irish athletes and English athletes, you know, compete so well at Commonwealth Games. Of course, 2022 in Birmingham was a fantastic experience, as it was in 2014 in Glasgow, as it was in 2002 in Manchester. And let's hope that the Commonwealth Games remains. We are working with Commonwealth Games England on what Plan B might look like, whether that be some sort of domestic-based Commonwealth Championships or some sort of festival involving specific federations, but more work to be done on that. Let's hope that the main event is scheduled for 2026 and watch this space.
Certainly will. Anything else that we should be mentioning?
Obviously, 2024, there's going to be a general election, if we believe what we hear and read. You know, it'd be interesting to see what changes for sport and leisure and physical activity that election will reap. From an athletics perspective, of course, really interested in being part of that discussion and debate and some of that lobbying and leveraging and campaigning work that sports governing bodies will be having within Westminster. We coordinate the cross-parliamentary group for running, and inevitably that rolls over and touches upon track and field as well. And some of the conversations we have with partners like London Marathon, working with Kim Ledbetter MP, who chairs that group, who also chairs a cross-parliamentary group on sport. So I think we're well plugged in to have informing those conversations. It's vitally important that we work to protect our stock of track and field facilities. More often than not, are owned by local authorities or universities and colleges or on school sites, making sure that we're, you know, protecting the interests of volunteers in our sport, encouraging more people to get involved in our sport, safeguarding athletes and runners and their experience, providing a great experience, but also celebrating the role that our sport plays in contributing towards wider government priorities such as education, regeneration, the health of the nation, physical and mental, and of course, social inclusion and equality and diversity, fundamentally important and close to my heart. And so there's a lot that our sport at all levels, locally, regionally, nationally, internationally, can provide in contributing towards wider agendas. And I think we've all got a role to play in advocating further investment, retained investment in athletics and running and wider sport and physical activity, making sure that wherever possible, our governance of the sport mirrors the participation base. And we're bringing in fresh perspective, fresh ideas, different opinions. I'm very clear as a leader that with difference helps us as leaders make better decisions, more better informed decisions for the people that we're here to serve. So that's certainly something I think in 2024 we'll have an even more keen focus on.
Yeah, well, interesting to hear that, actually, the sort of lobbying and involvement and relationship with government and MPs as well. And to have a real statistical difference in physical benefits, to be able to actually deliver that, that's what everyone desires, to see that real-time difference in terms of actual people's physical health. But that's a real challenge to deliver, isn't it?
Of course, physical health with the pressure on the NHS is a significant issue and scourge on society at this moment in time. But it's mental health and well-being as well. I think certainly pandemic, our younger people, you know, we face a mental health crisis, in my opinion. I think sport and physical activity should be at the forefront of leading that fight back, if you like, and supporting young people and older people. Of course, you know, myself, we're working in nearly a 100% remote working environment now. That could be challenging for people in the workplace in what is a very different lifestyle and working practice than it was pre-2020. You know, levels of stress generally and anxiety have grown to unprecedented levels. Having spoken to a number of people inside England Athletics, outside of England Athletics, in community time, if you like, leisure time, I think people are really feeling it. And I think sport and physical activity can provide a release, positive, constructive use of time, friendships, networks, and togetherness.
Absolutely. Well, great to chat to you. And as I say, let's hope it's a good year.
Thanks, Alex.
Thanks to Chris, and thanks to you for listening to this episode of the England Athletics podcast. If you enjoyed it, you can subscribe, listen, and download previous episodes on Spotify, SoundCloud, and Apple Podcasts. Of course, the England Athletics website and social media pages are other great places to stay up to date.